Joining us via the Brown and Crouppen Celebrity Line is Hub Arkish, and we always appreciate Hub joining us, and certainly somebody that can break down the Bears very well. Hub, thank you so much for joining us again. Hub, again, editor of Pro Football Weekly. You can follow him at Hub_Arkish. Hub, when you look at tonight's matchup, how big of a litmus test is this for the 5-1 Bears?
Well, I mean, you know, it's a better team. You want to prove that you belong, but I don't think it's critical one way or the other. The Rams, a very good football team as well at 4-2. I think what's interesting is that people immediately want to know about the Bears, want to question the Bears, and yet the Bears have played a far tougher schedule at 5-1 than the Rams have at 4-2. So it's a game that, you know, if they're a legitimate contender, they should be able to win, but they're a 6-point underdog, you know, and I realize that's just a betting line. But I don't see this making or breaking the season one way or the other. At the end of the day, after this, they get the Saints at home on Sunday, and then they go to Tennessee the Sunday after that. So I look at this more as of these three games, they have to win at least one. And if they win two of them, you got to start to take them pretty seriously.
And we don't know yet about Khalil Mack, do we, whether or not he's going to play tonight?
We don't, Chris, but I'd be really stunned if he didn't. The back injury that is on the injury list is a new injury. He had been on the injury list the last 3 or 4 weeks with a knee questionable on Friday or Saturday every week, and yet came out and played probably his best game, two games of the year in their last two games. Matt Nagy says that his understanding is that this back injury is more general soreness at this point in the season from guys who didn't have an off season more than any new traumatic injury of some kind. So my guess is he'll play. Now, you know, he could be a little limited, I suppose, but it would be quite surprising and quite a story if, in fact, he's unable to go, because the Bears have certainly suggested that the injury is nothing to worry about.
Well, you know, I'm sorry, BT, didn't mean to cut you off there. I know that usually coaches they kind of downplay the injury, so you never really know, and hopefully that is the case for him. But as far as the NFC goes, I haven't really decided yet whether it is the Green Bay Packers who are the best team in the NFC, or if it's the Seahawks, or if it's the Buccaneers. As you look at the entire league, what do you think?
Well, you know, I don't think anybody knows yet, Chris, because, you know, it's fascinating. Again, you know, nobody wants to take the Bears seriously, and yet it was just, 2 weeks ago that they beat the Bucs and really kind of destroyed them in the second half. They left Tom Brady dazed and confused. I certainly don't think the Bears are the best team in the NFC, but people are getting excited about the Bucs now because of what they've done in two games since that loss. Seattle, we know, is terribly flawed on defense. But going into last night, I thought was probably the best team in the NFC. The Packers are great on offense, but every bit as flawed on defense as Seattle is. And then I think everybody is still waiting for New Orleans, you know, and is San Francisco actually bouncing back now? I don't see the 49ers as being a solid, you know, NFC title contender again this year for, you know, several reasons. But they were the best team in the conference coming into the season. So you've really got, you know, 5-6 clubs that you got to keep an eye on. And I think it's going to be at least 2-4 more weeks before we can really say that one of these teams is definitively better than the others.
Hub, you mentioned the idea of the 49ers bouncing back. And look, questions there, obviously, which leads everyone to the question of, well, what the hell's going on the other side? The Patriots, I mean, they pummeled them 33-6. When you look at that situation over there, what do you see? Like, what is the biggest issue for the Patriots?
Well, they don't have a quarterback, for starters.
Problem.
You know, I mean, Cam Newton, he may have been the MVP of the league, and not may have, he was the legitimate MVP of the league in 2015, but he's never been the same player since. And a lot of that is, even though he is the size of a linebacker, these mobile running quarterbacks just don't last. And that's why, you know, you look at guys like Lamar Jackson and Kyler Murray, and you say, well, you know, they may be for real, but they better get it done quick, because after 4, 5, 6 years in this league, they're not the same player anymore. And by the same token, you know, when you ask who's the best team in the NFC, you probably come back to the Packers and the Seahawks because of Aaron Rodgers and Russell Wilson. In the case of New England, obviously there were things going on behind the scenes, things that nobody but Bill Belichick and Robert Kraft and Tom Brady, you know, maybe a few others, maybe Josh McDaniel are ever going to know. And whether it was the Patriots that had had enough and were more than happy to see Brady move on, or whether Brady felt that he needed to try it somewhere else before he left, we don't know. But it's pretty clear at this point that the Bucs are a better team with Tom Brady and the Patriots are a much less team afterwards. But then you got to go a step further, guys. I mean, nobody has been hit by this pandemic worse than the New England Patriots. They had six players opt out, including three key members of the team, you know, three guys that they win with, and Dante Hightower and Patrick Chung and Cannon on offense, you know. And then since then, you know, Newton comes down with it. Stephon Gilmore comes down with it, misses a game. He's the reigning defensive MVP. Now you're starting running back Sony Michel has been out. So, you know, I think just a combination of everything around them, you know, they've lost so much talent from the end of last season that it shouldn't be surprising where they're at. And I'll tell you, because they're the Patriots and Bill Belichick, not ready to write them off yet either. I know they're 2-4, which is stunning, and the Bills are 4-2, but they're going to play each other a week from Sunday. And at that point, if the Bills can knock them off, then you can probably put the Patriots to bed. But if the Patriots, you know, can steal a couple wins and climb back to 4-4 with one of them over Buffalo, they're really not done yet.
Hub Arkish is our guest here in the Fast Lane on 101 ESPN. He's the executive editor of Pro Football Weekly, NFL insider as well for 670 The Score in Chicago. Hub, I'm interested. I know that you follow the draft closely. What do you think about the Dolphins' decision to start Tua Tagovailoa? And do you feel as though that Tua has a good shot of making an immediate impact in his first start?
You know, it's what he was drafted for, so I certainly don't have any problem with putting him on the field, but I don't understand the timing of it. I mean, you know, what happened if you felt you didn't want him to start right away as a rookie, that suddenly, just because you're coming off a bye when the team is playing well and when Fitzpatrick is playing well, that now you've got to get him on the field? I mean, everybody I talk to, both NFL people and other analysts in the media, are confused by this because it kind of comes out of nowhere. And I think everybody's kind of where I am. Certainly can't criticize them for deciding to play the guy they drafted to be the franchise, but whatever this process has been doesn't make a lot of sense, because regardless of whether it's Fitzpatrick or Tua, they're not going to be a playoff team this year. There's other issues with that team. And so, you know, I guess this must have been their plan, and it's hard to understand why. You know, I mean, had they sat him down and Fitzpatrick played terribly, and if they were 0-5, 0-6, then you're fine with saying, let's go out and let him take his lumps, if in fact that's what happens. But this is the youngest team in the NFL. They're playing more rookie and first-year guys than anybody else in the league. And if the quarterback isn't ready, you're not just hurting him, you're hurting the development of all this other young talent, which is why we assumed Fitzpatrick was out there. And that hasn't changed. And so that's what's a little puzzling about the time. And, you know, even if Tua had gone in the second half and played lights out, but he went out and threw two passes, and now they say he's the starter. So it's a little hard to get your arms around as to exactly what the logic is behind it.
Mike McCarthy said he was not happy with his team, that they didn't stand up for Andy Dalton when he took that hit where John Bostic got ejected for the rest of the game. Does it say anything about him or what's going on there that the rest of the team did not go and immediately stick up for their QB?
No, I think it says a lot about the team and the guy who's the problem, which is the owner, not the coach or the players. You know, at the end of the day, guys, all McCarthy coaches are human too. And when anonymous players are critiquing the coaching staff the week before, when it was the players who embarrassed themselves as much, if not more, than the coaching staff, then they come back this week and that happens, that's the coach just firing one right back at the players and saying, if you want to play that game, go ahead, but I'm in charge. The issue here is that team does not have a general manager. They have the owner treating it like some expensive toy he bought at Toys R Us. Jerry Jones has no credentials whatsoever. to be the general manager of an NFL football team. And he has proven it over and over and over again with his inability to put together a complete roster. And he goes out and does these high-profile signings and guys that he can market and guys that he can build promo programs around, but he's not building a football team. I may have told you guys this because I know whatever shows I was doing, when people asked, at the beginning of training camp, I said they're the most overrated team in football. There was no question that this defense was going to struggle exactly the way it has. And now with all the injuries on the offensive line, because they did not prepare themselves to build the offense around Zeke Elliott, and instead we're going to build it around Prescott and that wide receiver core. And by the way, he's put together a great trio of wide receivers, but it's not the way you win in the NFL. And so, you know, McCarthy's going to take the fall and he's going to take the blame. I'm sure Jones will throw him under the bus because he's done it before, not in season. I mean, you know, there's too much at stake here financially and credibility-wise. But the problem there is Jerry Jones. Now, you know, Mike McCarthy may be adding to the problem as opposed to taking away from it. There's no question that some of those players that he's brought in who have questionable track records as far as part of the culture and other teams they've played are probably part of the problem too. But until Jerry Jones decides to run this like a real NFL team and get his ego out of the way, I just don't see anything changing there.
Well said. Hub, great stuff as always at Hub_Arkish on Twitter. Great stuff from the executive editor from Pro Football Weekly. Thank you so much, Hub. Enjoy the game tonight.
All right, guys. Thanks for having me. Take care.